Okay, well, this is going to be hopefully a friendly program, maybe not the most organized in the world, but that's part of the fun of ham radio. Some people do very organized things, and especially when you're helping with emergencies, you know, you have to be organized. And I've been a ham for 50 years now. My wife said, you got the half century, and so that'll be great. And that's one of the reasons my wife and I met is we were going to an ACB meeting, and she said, well, what are some of your hobbies? And I said, ham radio. And she said, oh, I've always wanted to do that. So I said, I'm not letting this one go. So how many people in the room here are hams? Can you clap? Yay, we got quite a few. And it sounds like we have quite a few others here, too. Before I get really carried away, I'd like to introduce the other folks in the panel. Debbie and Craig Phillips, we were so thrilled. We found some fellow hams right here in WCB. And I've been doing things, and they've been doing a lot of things. So they're going to do a lot of demonstrations. I have a few things here, and so we'll kind of go back and forth. So at this time, Craig, do you want to do something first, or you want Deb to come? Okay.
Good afternoon, and welcome to another Washington Council of the Blind ham radio breakout session. Just what is ham radio? Launched from Richfield, Washington, a gas balloon rises to over 60,000 feet, providing a panoramic view of the eastern Washington landscape for the radio amateurs below. They track its path and gather telemetry by the onboard automatic position reporting system, information vital to the recovery team on the earth below. A ham in Spokane makes friends over the radio with another ham in a new country. A Spokane amateur contacts the International Space Station for a first-person conversation with astronauts on board. And as a valuable part of emergency response communications, hams assist volunteers and help save the lives of those involved in hurricane-inflicted communities. This mix of fun, public service, and exploration is amateur radio. Although hams, as they are known, get involved for many reasons, they all have a common basic knowledge of radio technology, operating principles, and the desire to serve and communicate with one another by the magic on wings of air, radio.
Well, it's an opportunity to make a contact with virtually anyone around the world.
And now, with more fascinating aspects of ham radio, please, if you will, welcome from Spokane, Washington, Debbie, W7TSE, and Craig, W7CDP.
Thanks, Duff. He's one of our great old hams, I should say. He's licensed in the early 60s, so he's been around a long time in Spokane, Washington. As you can probably tell, he's got a big broadcast background, and a little more about that later. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Craig, W7CDP, and with me this afternoon is my XYL. Now, XYL in the ham, that means YL means young lady. X means she's an ex-lady, which means she's married. So there you go, XYL. W7TSE. We both have been ham operators for a number of years now. Debbie is a technician, and I'm licensed as an amateur extra. The only difference between the two is the frequencies that you can use. Technician entry is an entry level, and the amateur extra just means that you're granted all the privileges of the amateur radio extra license, which covers the whole amateur band. I'm also a volunteer examiner for the testing for ham license, too, as well. Amateur radio is known as ham radio. It uses the radio frequency spectrum for purposes of non-commercial exchange of messages, wireless experimentation, self-training, private recreation, radio spots such as fox hunting. No, that's not the furry little friends. radio sports, such as fox hunting, and emergency communications. Radio amateurs use a variety of voice, text, imaging, and data transmission modes and have access to frequency allocations throughout the RF spectrum on the amateur band. This enables communications across the city, regions, counties, continents, and the world, or even into space, and even bounce signals off the moon. In many countries, amateur radio operators may also send messages, receive, or relay radio communications between computers and transceivers connected to a secure virtual private network on the internet. Today, we're going to quickly go over some of those more popular ham radio equipment that we would find in everyone's shack, as well as some sound bites so you can hear what that actually might sound like, too, as well. I, as well, will be talking about hotspots and other modes that are used in We'll be talking about hotspots and other modes that are used to convert a signal to go over the wide world internet. I'll start with the least expensive and go to the most expensive HTs or handhelds equipment. I have an array of such those radios up front of here, so at the end, come on up and you can go ahead and I call it braille them or whatever you like to do. I'd like to go home with them, though, so if you could leave them here, that'd be great. Let's start with the 2-meter, though, HT, normally found in every ham toolbox. That can be used to talk radio to radio, direct, or through a repeater system, which Debbie will cover. They are very versatile and very inexpensive to start your new hobby. Now, I'm going to turn over to Debbie, W7TSC, to talk about the 2-meter radio and the use of repeaters and how to run a net. Debbie?
He's making me move. Hello. So I'm just going to make a couple comments off the top of my head because I can. See, you get me in front of a mic, this is what happens. So our ham shack is usually the room where you keep all your ham stuff. And some people have really fancy ham shacks, and some people have really messy ham shacks. Ours is the really messy ham shack. It also serves as our laundry room. So sometimes I have to say, get out. I'm doing laundry today. Get out. So I'm wondering if any of you have figured out why my call sign is W7TSE. Has anybody figured it out?
Well, W7 is Washington, isn't it?
Right. What about the TSE? And if you don't figure this out, Danielle, I'll be really disappointed. Come on. Tango, Sierra, Echo. Nope. The Seeing Eye. The Seeing Eye is where I have received all of my dogs. And so when I was trying to come up with a call sign, I wanted something that I would remember, because it's important to remember your call sign, because if somebody calls you and you don't remember your call sign, you can't respond. And you're supposed to use your call sign when you come on the air and, you know, when you leave. So anyway, I'm here to talk about 2-meter operations over a repeater and running a net. First, ham radio repeaters are equipment able to receive a signal and to transmit it at a higher power or a different frequency in order to permit the input signal to cover a longer distance. Usually, repeaters are placed on hilltops or in tall buildings in order to cover higher distances. In some cases, repeaters are linked together via an IRLP, that's India, Romeo, Lima, Papa. Thank you. I was going to say Peru, and I knew that wasn't right. IRLP signal or line of sight. In eastern Washington, we have a system that covers most of everything east of the Cascade Mountains via a line of sight, or one repeater direct to another. However, there are many systems that are linked using the IRLP system. IRLP is the brainchild of Dave Cameron, whose call sign is VE7LTD. That's Victor Echo 7 Lima Tango Delta of Vancouver, BC. IRLP is the abbreviation used for the Internet Radio Linking Project, which Dave developed over the past several years. It's a system that uses the Internet to link repeaters. As an example, an Eastern Washington system, KBARA or Kabara, is linked via the IRLP to the west side of the state, to East Tiger Repeater, just south of Issaquah, Washington, during net activities. And I know that Kabara has several nets, and there are often people from this side of the state that connect to those nets. Repeaters can and are found on more than just 2 meters. Do some search in your area for repeaters. Generally, they will give you the frequency, offset, and tone that would be required to access a particular repeater. You do not need a separate registration, as in the digital modes, to access these repeaters. However, some do not give out their PL tones, which are the keys to access an analog repeater. Okay. The next thing we're going to do is talk a little bit about nets and what they are and running a net. I ran the XYL net for a time, or actually the YL net, to get women interested in amateur radio. After a while, though, it seemed like we had just as many men or more men coming on the net and hardly any ladies. And so because of that and some other reasons, I decided that my time was probably better used elsewhere. But I've also sat in and I've taken over when Craig was on both analog and digital, if he gets called away or something. An amateur radio net, or simply ham net, is an on-the-air gathering of amateur radio operators. Most nets convene on a regular schedule and specific frequency, both in AF and HF, excuse me, and LF, and are organized for a particular purpose, such as relaying messages, discussing a common topic of interest in severe weather, in other emergencies, or simply as a regular gathering of friends for conversation. Sometimes you get somebody who's long-winded, but that's okay. Everyone has something interesting to say, and we can all learn from them. Running the net means that you are the net controller, which means it's a directed net, and like when I ran my net, I was the boss. And sometimes that meant that I had to do a quick subject change if something came up that was maybe causing a little tension. So sometimes you have to diffuse stuff. Sometimes for a while on the Kabara repeater, there was a guy that was, he'd get on and he'd make stupid noises, or he would swear. And profanity is not acceptable on ham radio at all, and in fact the FCC really frowns on it, and you can get fined and all kinds of stuff. So it's up to the net controller to, you know, sometimes they have to shut down the whole net, and I saw that happen. So as net control, it's your responsibility to take control, even up to taking down the IRLP system, if that's where interference is coming from. We don't lash out at anyone over the radio. That's all done in private. So, yes, that's one thing you don't want to do is, nets can be a great deal of fun, and if you have not joined one and you're a licensed ham, please do so. And even if you're not, you can go and listen to nets. I have a friend who, I keep telling this guy, Irving, when are you going to get tested? When are you going to take the test? And he's like, oh, I will eventually, so maybe someday. But he loves to listen to the different nets and things. So if you get an opportunity to run a net, I really recommend that you do it. At first, I felt like I was juggling little balls. And the people would check in, and it seemed like they were checking in faster than I could write down their numbers and their call signs. And it takes a little bit of adaptation to actually be able to hear and understand what they're saying. By the time I was at the end of doing my net, I was pretty good. For a while, though, Craig helped me a lot. I would not maybe understand somebody, and he'd say, no, they said LJN or whatever. And I thought they said LAN. So it takes a certain amount of just getting used to what the radio sounds like. So without any further ado, I'm going to return the back to Craig.
Thank you. Like I said, good morning. This is Craig, K5CAP. I'm your Tuesday morning net control operator for the Alaska Morning Net. We encourage everybody, regardless of where you're located, to check in with us. We don't care what country you're from or anything like that. Check in with us. You become part of the Alaska Morning Net family when you do.
Well, good morning, and welcome to the Digital Radio Enthusiast Morning Net. This is Duff, WA7BFN, located here in wonderful Spokane, Washington. This net, of course, meets every Monday through Friday from 7 till whenever time on D-Star Reflector 29 Alpha.
7 Hotel Romeo Tango, Patton Greenacre.
W1JOP, Grand
Connecticut.
87A-AT. N5DZO Leo in cool Corinth, North Texas.
W4LKS Randy in Four Lakes.
And W7CDP, good morning, Duff.
All right, that's a little bit of, that's a morning net we have on D-Star every morning, Monday through Friday, out of Spokane on 29 Alpha. And that's, we'll get some more sound bites, but that's how D-Star would sound. So it's pretty clear. All right, well, let's continue on now with the digital world of ham radio. Again, I'll start with the least expensive equipment, and then we'll build up to a crescendo. And you think that some of that Braille equipment is expensive. Wow. Ham radio will depart you from any penny you ever had in your life almost. So, all right. Digital communication modes have gained popularity over the years in the market because of superior performance in environment and interface. Noise and other contributing factors such as degraded the quality and the standards of the FM analog signal. Narrower bandwidth and the use of increased spectrum have led to the development of digital communication technology, which is widely adapted in the public safety and the private business sector that use two-way radio technology. Now, I'm going to get once in a while a little techie here, but I'm trying to keep this pretty pretty mundane for maybe those who are not hams. So you may have to come up afterwards if I need to explain something. We'll give it a whirl. Okay. Our first mode here that we're going to talk about to start is the digital radio, mobile radio, the DMR radio. They're the least expensive. And they're open, and they were limited to the open mobile radio standard defined in the European Telecommunications Standards Institute. Price starts around $50 for a handheld one of those, and I have one up here. Digital radio program is more complex than other modes, but once learned, it's not difficult to program. DMR use zones, colors, and code plugs to make it work. However, the DMR radio is also capable of running on analog, but all the benefits of the digital signal are stripped away. Before you're allowed on the DMR system, you must register. You will receive a unique number that is assigned to you only, but you would have that only number for the whole world. There are currently 40 repeaters on DMR system here in the Pacific Northwest, 40 plus, and there are about 30 plus of those here in the state of Washington alone. DMR has not been as popular here in the Northwest as other parts in the U.S. However, it is gaining popularity with outstanding audio quality. DMR and P25, which is another mode, both use two time slots and a 12.5 kilohertz channel bandwidth. Now, we're going to explain that in just a minute here. What this means is that if you take a string as long as you like, and you take that string and you chop that up into equal lengths, as many as you want, but they're all equal lengths, that string represents the radio frequency. From those of you who are new to the hobby, or let's use the radio station frequency, say 101.9 FM, just to grab one, only you would be on the FM band. Now, you have the ability to talk using every other piece of that chopped up string or frequencies to carry on a conversation versus using the whole string as you would in a regular analog usage. In other words, you'll be talking on a 1-2-1-2, first piece of string, the second piece of string, first piece of string, second piece of string, and that's just the way it goes through the whole conversation at the same time using the same frequency, which I use. One of the hotspots I have up here is set on 441.2 megahertz. These are called time slots, and the DMR has two time slots, time slot 1, time slot 2, or string piece 1, string piece 2. One of the advantage is that by using the two time slots over a continuous of the communication, you save up to 40% use of battery as well, because you're essentially only used transmitting on half the time rather than the full length of the string. Quite a savings of battery life when you look at other HT modes. You then have zones. Zones, to break it down further, DMR radio uses zones. A zone is just a group of individual channels and frequencies. Some model radios may limit the number of channels per zone or the number of zones that are allowed. You could program zones for local channel, DMR or analog, another zone maybe for neighboring states, zone for something else. If you have a DMR radio that is VHF capable, you could program a zone for all the possible National Weather Service weather channels, again, making sure your programming is on receive only. Zones are just a way to manage a large number of channels, much like file folders or directories on your computer. Color codes. In addition, DMR repeaters use color codes, much like analog repeaters use tone. To access a repeater, you must program your radio to use the same color code or tone as the repeater. There are 16 different colors on a DMR machine. We almost always use color code 1 in this area, although when you get back east, they start to overlap and you'll use more than one. The use of color codes is a non-optional on DMR system. You must use it. If your color code does not set correctly, you will not be able to access the repeater. The only real purpose for using different colors is when multiple repeaters operate on the same frequencies, have an overlapping coverage area. In the world of analog, this is the same concept as we call a PL tone. It's just a tone that tells the repeater to open up, here comes a signal. And if you don't have that, it won't open up. All right, now for the biggie, code plugs. Oh, boy. Code plugs are similar to radio configuration files using a manufacturer's program software or other commercially available software such as CSI. You configure the channels and operate parameters in the radio. This file is uploaded to the radio and typically should also be saved on your computer for backup. You can also download the code plugs for the radio or to the radio if you need to modify it. Building a code plug can take many hours, especially if you want to program hundreds of channels. The code plug can also contain contact lists, radio IDs, call signs, and a number of other things displayed. You can download code plugs with contact lists populated using the generator of the DMR MARC system, and that's just an internet system out there. In most cases, hams share their code plugs with other hams. Here in the PNW, we have the organization called the PNW DMR. On their webpage, you can find common code plugs such would be downloaded and installed directly to your radio, and they do all the programming. That's very nice. All right, let's listen to a little sound bite of DMR. And David, that would be track 3 for you, DMR.
Are you open to questions?
Yeah, we'll slate to the end. Okay. But don't lose what the question is, okay?
All right, well, I have a number of
them. Okay. Well, we'll give it a whirl here.
This is the DMR Digital Mobile Radio Data Stream. This is the audio after it's been decoded.
Just demonstrating how the audio sounds through a DMR, or digital mobile radio repeater system. This is effectively the Washington One Talk Group, which covers all of the state of Washington and any other surrounding areas that opt in, either through PNW, DMR, or Bandmeister. This is KC7AAD in Spokane.
As you can see, the quality of the DMR radio is very superior to the rest of the digital world. All right, next, let's move into the System Fusion by Yaesu. The price starts of these start around $180 to $200. Its implementation of the digital radio utilizes the C4FM technology to transmit digital voice and data over the amateur radio bands, was introduced in 2013. Yaesu introduced it as System Fusion. Unlike its commercial counterpart, System Fusion is an amateur digital operating mode straying away from the design considered to make commercial solutions less appealing and more difficult for amateur radio. This system is not as popular here in the West as it is back East. Other places of the world or throughout, you can find fusion radio repeaters still here in the Pacific Northwest, but not as many. Okay, David, fusion.
This is the System Fusion C4FM data stream. This is the audio after it's been decoded.
This is KA7FPV doing a demonstration of System Fusion C4FM on DN voice mode. This is KA7FVV.
Okay, you can see the signal's not as good on System Fusion as what we just heard on DMR, so keep that in mind. All right, the last system I want to discuss is widely accepted. It's D-Star, the Digital Smart Technology for Amateur Radio, D-Star. It's a digital voice and data protocol for amateur radio. The system was developed in the late 1990s by the Japanese Amateur Radio League and uses packet-based standards. D-Star radios price start around $250 up to $2,000. D-Star is a ham radio system which offers digital voice and data communication. It connects repeater sites over the internet and forms a wide world ham radio network. The D-Star system provides capabilities and functionality to the ham radio world and increases the efficiency of emergency communications. D-Star compatible radios are available in HF, VHF, and UHF, and microwave amateur radio bands from the 902 megahertz up to the 250 gigahertz area as well. In addition to the over-the-air protocol, D-Star also provides significant specifications for network connectivity, enabling D-Star radios to be connected to the Internet or other networks, allowing streams of voice and packet data to be routed via amateur radio. A packet is nothing more than, i.e., a box you get from Amazon full of pieces and parts that make up something that you have purchased, a coffee maker, a vacuum, a radio, etc. Digital data is transmitted in these little boxes, and after all the boxes are put together at the delivery point, you will hear the voice and see the pictures at the other end. A packet is merely a piece of the data stream. D-Star compatible radios are manufactured by ICOM, Kenwood, and Flex Radio System primarily, and tend to be on the high end of the cost because of the proprietary patents they have on them. Before you're allowed to use D-Star system, your call sign must be registered. The intent of this requirement isn't quite clear, but my guess is it's meant to keep the riffraff off the system. Until you're registered, you will only be able to talk to your local D-Star repeater. Your signal won't be transmitted to any linked repeater. Your local D-Star repeater might have a web page where you can go and request to be registered if you're not already. Or you can drop into dstarinfo.com, dstarinfo.com, and you can register there as well. You only need to register once to gain access to all of what D-Star has to offer: RagChew, the world, thousands of nets, emergency use, etc. D-Star uses repeaters and reflectors. A repeater are, again, on the high elevation and receive your signal from the D-Star equipment radio. That repeater sends the signal down the Internet to a computer-based server, which can call it a digital conference room or a reflector. Reflectors are numbered, i.e., 1C or 1 Charlie, 35 Charlie, 29 Alpha, etc. The number is the reflector's unique number. Simply, during the net, when a ham calls to reflector 29 Alpha, they're calling into a chat room, just like you would on a conference call from your home phone, but by using your D-Star capable radio. There are also X reflectors. They are just a generic of the open source reflector, which would work the same way. Most of the uses in Spokane, we are on 29 Alpha, but this during a net, if that reflector goes down, we'll go to X reflector 35 Charlie. And we say that in the net when we get ready to run it. You can check your local area to see if what reflectors or your repeater might be hanging on. So you can check that out and go from there. All right, let's listen to a D-Star data stream now, number 5.
This is the D-Star data stream. This is the audio after it's been decoded.
This is KD7AAT on D-Star 29 Alpha.
Okay. That's what, again, D-Star, but again, DMR is probably the superior voice of them all because of the bandwidth. All right. Enough of that. Let's move on into hotspots now. And I have two or three of them up here that are they're actually hooked into the battery here, and they're running. And my DMR radio over there was talking a minute ago when it was setting itself up. So now whether it'll actually get out of here, I don't know. We'll see about that later. Another way to reach a chat room or go out to the world from most modes is use of a hotspot. They range in price from about the $200 level on up. The hotspot is a mini repeater, in that it receives the signal from your D-Star radio, then pushes the signal into the Internet to the reflector or the chat room. The same as the same function happens with the DMR radio as well. A repeater on the mountain is normally set to a certain reflector, i.e. 35 Charlie. And if you need to change it, if you have, if you're going through a repeater, you have to link and unlink that reflector in order to bring up the one that you would like to use. The advantage of using the hotspot, merely all you need to do is turn your radio dial to the reflector you want, key it up, and that'll automatically change the hotspot. So it's much quicker and a lot cleaner. So it's just as easy as turn the knob on the radio, and there you go. Debbie and I, when we travel usually on 29 Alpha, and the hotspot is working through our Verizon hotspot on our phone connected to a cell towers along the way. For example, on our way from here, we were connected on 29 Alpha from Spokane to Seattle on 29 Alpha, except if there's a cell service drop. And there's one spot out in the middle of the state where it does drop a little bit. There are a variety of hotspots out there. I use a jumbo spot, which has a Pi 0, or there's the Open Spot 2, both with Wi-Fi connectivity, and an older Open Spot 2 as well. There are computer-based hotspots or MMDVMs that are used as well to connect ham radio to the internet using your computer. I have both up here, so you can come and take a look at them after the presentation. There are other modes too as well you might hear about in ham radio that are popular today. One is FT8. FT8, as well as many other radio computer-based programs, they're sent over the ham radio and received a set of signals on either HF, high frequency, or low frequency LF radios. The signals that is captured display on the computer screen using a program for the FT8 is the JS8 call. There are many out there, but that's the one that I use. The FT8 is a very popular mode, and more are being developed all the time. So here's what the FT8 data stream might sound like.
This is the FT8 audio.
So that's what it sounds like. And then again, if you look at your screen, that's one of the problems with in the blind community. FT8 is not very well accepted because I don't know of any screen readers that actually read that kind of data on the screen.
Can I make a comment?
Yes.
There have been some recent developments, and the screen reading of FT8 is improving all the time. At first, they could only transmit, and now they can even receive signals and have a conversation. So on the Blind Hams Net, which I'll talk about if we have time, things are improving for blind folks all the time.
Ah, that's so true. So true. All right. The next one here now, you're all familiar with, it's the radio teletype. Basically the old teletype way back. Is a telecommunication system consisting originally of two or more electromechanical teleprinters in different locations. They connect by radio, either wired or linked. These machines were later superseded by personal computers, PCs, running software to emulate teleprinters. Typewriters involved from early landline teleprinters operating at the beginning of the mid-1880s. So they've been around a long time. And here's a sound of what that might, because you hear the voice or you see the type. I mean, you see the type come through your phone or this, A, B, C, D, whatever. But here's actually what that data stream sounds like.
This is the RTTY audio or radio teletype.
So there you go. Boy, if you had to listen to that, that'd drive you nuts. Anyway, all righty. The next one I have here is CW, Continuous Wave. It was the first digital mode that ham radios had, and even before that. It was the first digital mode out there. Morse code is a long-established form of communication. It is widely used for more than a century and provides its value in a variety of areas, from landline telegraph systems through the radio communications. Essentially, CW refers to as Morse code, transmission using a radio signal, the abbreviation coming from the fact that it uses a carrier wave or continuous wave that is interrupted. In other words, we're back to that string. Just that one string, it's just kind of the same, I'll say. It's more than that, it's a squeal, but whatever. We'll hear it in a minute. And then it's just a break in that. When you push down the key on a Morse code key, you're just breaking that stream is all you're doing. But that stream continues on. Continuous wave. There's no modulation apart from the breaking because of the Morse code characters. Due to the characteristics, it's a mode that is easily heard around the world on low power. 5 to 10 watts of power. You can work the world in most cases. It's an amazing mode. And I'm sure you all have heard this sound.
This is CW or Morse code.
And that's what it sounds like. Everybody's probably heard that one. All right, the last mode I want to cover is amateur radio via the satellite. This has become a very popular mode as well. Every 90 minutes, a satellite travels around the Earth, however, not necessarily overhead. There are a number of popular phone programs that will tell you when the next satellite will be in view to make a contact. All you need is an antenna, which can be, you can buy them commercially. Arrow makes a great one. I was going to bring it, and did I? No. Forgot it. And but also you can make your own, called a homebrew. And you can do that with like, say, like an old tape measure. You can cut it the lengths you want. And some people, they hook it to a piece of metal or just a piece of wood or whatever, and they can make up their own directional antenna with that. So for $35 to $40, you can pick up a cheap radio on eBay. For another $10 to $20, you can get the material you need at the hardware store to make your directional antenna. And you're in business. Okay, give it a try. You will get hooked, actually. There are actually some QSO conversation you might hear in the satellite work. In this case, what we're going to hear, they're exchanging grid square formation. That's kind of a contesting thing in a way. People, grid squares, for some of you who don't know, are all over the United States, are just like, I mean, all over the world. Just little squares is all they are. And so it's the quest to see how many hams you can get in those individual squares. You kind of color it off, and oh wow, you got it. So there you go. So let's hear what satellite may sound like.
7th Street, Scott. W60NR, K7 Victor, November Echo, Delta Mike 43.
K7 Victor, Echo November, Whiskey Alpha 6, Delta November Radio, Charlie Mike 87.
Okay, it's Victor, November Echo, K7 Victor, November Echo, QSL.
7-3, Scott.
W60NR, K7 Victor, November Echo, Delta Mike 43.
K7 Victor, Echo November, Whiskey Alpha 6, Delta November Radio, Charlie Mike 87.
Okay, it's Victor, November Echo, K7 Victor, November Echo, QSL.
So you can see it's a pretty fast-paced thing because satellites don't sit there. They keep moving. That was just a little over half a minute long, and the satellite it moves a long ways in that length of time. So if you're going to talk on it, you got to get onto it and move it, or you're going to lose out. All right, that was the last mode that I had, and this time I want to thank WA7BFN Duff for a wonderful audio today. Duff has been a ham since the early 60s. And is a wonderful resource of knowledge. If you get audios from Handy Ham, you may hear his golden voice. Duff will be there to help you through your training and become a ham or upgrading. Thanks, Duff, a lot for what you did for us. All right. Thank you, each of you, for joining us today for the introductory time in the digital radio and analog world of amateur radio. Come on up if you want when you get done, and you can braille or whatever.
Didn't we have a few questions?
Here. But we're gonna do that next before we do anything. And that's the end of the audio, so we're done with there. So I guess questions now. We have a mic or something.
Jeff had a few questions if he's still here.
Yeah. We're getting a mic here. Hang on.
So I've been out of the hobby for quite a number of years. I became a ham in 1980. Kind of dates me, I guess. If someone wanted to get into, 2 meters or 220 or 440 again, what accessible gear are people recommending these days, with having all the PL tones running around these days and all of that? And I'm not worried about price necessarily. Well, maybe I am.
Can I speak to that?
From a blindness perspective, I'm just curious what you guys are recommending these days.
Well, there are a number of good radios out there. Every HT in the 2 meter range, if it's for amateur radio, it'll be set up to handle whatever you're going to need. In the 2 meter area anyway. It'll take care of the PL tones and everything. Again, they range, you can start, from like the $50 or less one. Actually, you can get them cheaper than that right on up.
Right, but do all the menus speak in all of these or not now?
Can I demonstrate the most accessible HT right now?
Yeah.
I have the Kenwood THD-74. And it is pricey. It's over $400.
That's not bad.
My lovely wife got it for Christmas. And so you power it on.
SB memory 1.
Oh, and he's turning his on too. And his is set up for D-Star. And I haven't. So I'll let him demonstrate that.
Actually, that's as much as these talk. There's other ones that talk. It'll tell you when you change frequencies. It'll when it fired up. Let me turn it off here again. And again, this is on D-Star. Just a minute here. Here we go.
So if you need to configure PL tones and stuff, do those menus speak?
On that Kenwood, they do.
Yeah. Kenwood, some of them, they don't.
You can use, there's a computer program. A couple different computer programs that help you do that.
Right. He was saying, yeah, there are computer programs
I heard that.
To use to install it right in your radio.
Are they accessible?
Well, usually they're in a spreadsheet format.
The D-74 that he's referencing can be on around 479. It talks the tones. So it will do 2 meters, 440, and 220, as well as the D-Star. But it will be, you can talk it through the tones. You will tell you if it's CT and DSS, etc. When you get into the memories, you can name the memories, or you can keep the memory frequency displaying. It has two audio settings. RT Systems has software, however, that you can also use if you want to go on and use the digital modes to program into it. There are some barriers, however, with RT Systems working with JAWS and with Narrator, so you use NVDA to use it. I've had the radio since it came out. When I first got it, it was over $650. Fortunately, it's dropped down to about $479.
Yeah, thanks. I use the RT systems just to load up the program, so I don't usually listen to it. I do have it on, though, in case Debbie wants to use it. It's there so she can figure out where it is, what's on, what's it going to. But yeah, it's a great versatile radio. You can also listen to HF radio on it too, as well. You can't transmit to it, but you can listen to HF radio on it as well. So it's a very versatile radio. It's a great radio.
I could demonstrate the other end of the spectrum, the lowest cost radio, if you want to get into DMR or analog AM/FM radio, and it's called the Baofeng DG77S. that they have a 77, which has buttons and so forth, but the 77S is just a plain radio with no screen, and you program it through the computer, but it does talk a lot once you start it. So if you power it on.
Power on. 5.
Okay, that told me the channel. Now, I'm going to press the button here on the bottom.
Channel 5. Receive frequency 440.925. Transmit frequency 445.925. Lock 2. Color 1.
Oop, color
ID
1.
ID code 3153735. Power high.
And then if you want to know how your battery is doing, you press this other little button.
Channel 5. Receive
Oops,
frequency
I pressed
four,
the wrong
four,
one here.
Zero,
it's a little harder
nine,
to get
two,
to.
Five.
But anyway.
Channel 5.
Come on, battery, where are you?
Battery, 0.0.
So, that is the cheapest radio that can get you onto DMR or FM, and that you can get for around, you know, $89 or something. And there's one other one that people use, the TYT radio, and there's ham radio advanced tools that you can program into it. And so when you power it on, it'll sound like this. So it's that CW, of course, and so that when you change the channel, it will read out in Morse code the name of the talk group, the DMR talk group that you're on. And those radios sell for around $100, and this one is UHF only. But it's a pretty good little radio, just a little bit more complicated to program. If you're going to get into these modes, it's really a good idea to have an Elmer that has gone through it. But the Blind Hams list is a wealth of information. It's pretty busy, but you can go to Blind Hams groups. You know, it's an IO group, and I have several other websites here, but, you know, maybe I can send out something later, because I imagine there's other questions.
And on the other end, while we're waiting for a question, if you're just looking for just strictly a 2-meter one, Bofang, you have to be careful, though, because some of them were not FCC approved, but I think they've taken care of a lot of that now. But you go on to eBay, the older ones, you know, for $30, you can buy a bag full of them. So, and they're just a little, I know you can't see it, but I've got it up here. And it works fine, it really does. But, and it also talks too when you start up, it tells you what channel it's on. So,
to get started with the radio and that kind of stuff, what's the cost of the licensing? And what does the licensing all consist of to have to get that? Because don't you have to go and learn code first before you get on the radio?
No, not any longer. Morse code is not required under the new licensing for any of the, for tech, general, or amateur extra. They quit that in 1985, I believe it was. And so now there is testing involved that's required. And the cost is $14. And if you pass your tech, you get for free, you can try the general test. And once in a while, we have somebody who can do it. In fact, we had one not too long ago that passed tech, general, and amateur extra all in one night, just bang. So he did it on $14. That's pretty rare. The amateur extra license is pretty difficult. The question pool for the amateur extra is 700. Questions, and they pick 50 out of that, so they're pretty technical. Whereas the technician, which is the lower end of it, and there's only 35 questions on your test, there's 423 in that total pool, and they pick 30 out of it random. However, they're not all rules or regs. They are specific, like so many from some certain different categories. So that's how they do it. You got to work at it, though. But it's $14, what it is.
Yeah.
Check on that number. I think it's 15.
It depends on if you're ARRL or W5YI.
ARRL.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. It's 15. Okay. FY, which I do both, and W5YI is $14.
I'm also a VA, so.
Cheaper. Yeah. There you go. But you know all the ins and outs.
we're all
you know,
still learning.
You know, it's funny. I always tell the people when they come in, you know, it's like, thank God I don't have to take a test again. You know, I'd have to study a lot. That amateur extra is a tough one, I'll tell you. It's very tough.
One other quick thing I wanted to mention is those of you that like YouTube, and if you want to learn a lot more about blind accessible radios, it's growing. It's a site called CQ Blind Hams. And so if you go to that on YouTube, you'll hear several blind people demonstrating a lot of different pieces of ham radio equipment as blind users. And you're going to love it.
Any other questions?
How you doing? This is Eric from Seattle here. So I was wondering, when you guys are talking about D-Star, I was wondering, you guys are talking about, I was listening to the quality of the audio, and was thinking, now, of course the audio codec has already been defined, but I was saying, would it be better in a case to possibly use Opus or a variant of that for transmission of audio? Because it actually does save bandwidth, and it's designed for bandwidth-constrained conditions.
Ooh, I don't have an answer for that. Anybody else have an answer for that? Somebody? Anybody?
I guess wow. D-Star, because they've made the standards, and people are kind of sticking to them right now.
But yeah.
Ham radio people love to experiment, so that's an interesting idea.
Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah, if you... if you take like the ARRL magazine, or if you're just on a myriad of websites out there, it's incredible. It seems like almost every day something new comes up, somebody's done something, or they've tweaked whatever we already have. And so it's very difficult to keep up. It comes apart or point when you just kind of like, well, okay, and move on. So there's a lot out there. Any other questions? Danielle. We need a just a minute, Daniel.
Oh, I can talk louder though. Just ask my husband.
We're streaming the audio here, though.
Thank you. I was going to say I talk loud enough. Just ask my husband. My question had to do with handy hams. I went to a camp, and there's where I got my tech. I had to re-get my tech though because it lapsed. And now my is KI7QPH. And my question is, used to be that handy hams was about the only place you could really, really go. And I'm wondering what the relationship is now. I'm also wondering how I can get some help to get my general class.
Okay, well, actually... there are a ton of things on the internet. You can actually go, and there's question pools. You can just sit down and do that. There are books you can get that are accessible. Handyham certainly is a good way to do it. There's no doubt about it. But you're also going to find in the area, especially the Spokane area, there is one person I can get you in contact who does, on a Saturday, he does for techs and generals, once in a while extras, I think. But he does classes and run you all through it, and then you take the test at the end of the day. So it's a one-day shot. So so there is a way to do that, and I can get you in touch with that so you can do it that way. But there's a lot of stuff on the internet, a lot of stuff.
I also wanted to mention, before I forget about it, if you like to listen to shortwave, Frank, we have Frank that can maybe just say something very briefly about his shortwave radio, but there's also Web SDR, and you can get on that and go into web stations that are all over the world. And so maybe we should let Frank just say a little bit about his accessible shortwave receiver.
Nothing accessible, actually. What I have is I've got the little SkyWave SSB radio from Sea Crane, which is the smallest one, and it's just it's just a receiver, and I have it with me here. But I purchased 4 different receivers. They're all used by blind shortwave listening people and hams, and compared them, and most of them are not very accessible. One model you can it has direct hotkeys to get it into the 14 different meter bands. You know, 10 up to 120. You just hit a key and you know which meter band you're in. But then once you start tuning, you cross into another band and not know where you are. Another model actually beeps every time you cross the meter band when you're tuning along, which is real nice. Most of them have both grosser tuning and finer tuning, and a lot of them have bands besides the shortwave band, air band, weather band. Some are rechargeable, some aren't. Some have external antenna inputs, and some don't. One model, and they all have little features, but one model that I really like has got a whip antenna that is not breakable. Well, let me say, it's very hard to break. And I'm an antenna breaker, you know. I busted off so many antennas off radios. When you get up to the top, thinnest part of the whip, they've used some kind of spring steel or something, and it just bends and springs back. A real nice feature. I wish more radios did that. But I've got the smallest, most portable one here is the Sea Crane radio, and if someone wants to come up and look at it, it is really a cute radio. And if you just want a radio to carry with you when you travel, you can pick up single sideband. It's got all the meter bands. It's got air. It's got weather. And it's pocket size. Shirt pocket size. So, but I can't say it's accessible, you know.
Or you can spend thousands of dollars like I've got and get the same thing.
Shirt pocket size?
Yeah, I guess we're on our borrowed time now, aren't we? So,
yeah, we want to close this down because they want to tear out the front of the room for the talent show tonight. We got to tear all this down and reset it up. So
anybody that wants to come up for a minute and feel the radio, you could do that while we're taking down.
Or anybody wants to come up and look at the stuff, it's up here.